Hello, welcome to the Tottenham Way Transfer Window special podcast. I'm Dan Kilpatrick. Regular listeners will know that Tom Hayward usually presents the show, but he's very, very selfishly still on his honeymoon. Now, fortunately, I am joined by another Tom, and also another Tom who's just got married. It's Tom Allnut from Press Association Sports. Tom, how are you? Congratulations on your wedding.
Thank you very much. A special podcast. We've come to Wetherspoons, right?
So yes, I was just about to mention, Tom and I are literally sitting in a booth in Highbury and Islington Wetherspoons to do this podcast. So don't say we're not dedicated to the cause. We've had to stop one pod already because an elderly lady approached us and asked for a menu, and I didn't want to have to edit that out. So here we are. Tom, you got back from your honeymoon on Tuesday, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
So you had a chance to cover the deadline day madness, if not the whole transfer window. What were you doing yesterday, and what was your take on the whole charade?
Well, I think we were expecting Tottenham to be busy. They always are, aren't they, at the end of the window, and they definitely did disappoint. You know, it was busy all throughout the day. I mean, they just seemed to have three or four players always on the go, and I think it ended up being a pretty good day for Tottenham. I mean, you know, they brought in Llorente and obviously completed the deal for Aurier. I think it was a bit of a shame they didn't get Gomez over the line, but overall I think they'll be pretty happy, don't you think, with the window?
I think that's an interesting assessment, saying that you think it was a good deadline day overall. I've got to say, I think, speaking on behalf of the fans, which I know I shouldn't, I think most people are unhappy with it. I feel like most people feel, or at least felt at the start of the day, that Spurs needed to get a creative midfielder and maybe a pacey winger, or at least one or the other, over the line. And of course Llorente is a massive bonus and quite an unexpected bonus, but I still think that seemed to be the priority for me. And obviously Gomez, they tried for, they apparently didn't try for Barkley in the end, but it does feel like that's a hole in the squad.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think that should have been high up their list, finding another attacking midfielder, someone who can add a bit of pace, a bit more penetration. I definitely agree. When you think that Ali's not going to be around for most of the group stage of the Champions League, you know, I'm surprised they didn't really go for that and even maybe spend another sort of 20, 25, 30 million on someone around that in that area. But I think that getting cover for Kane was really important, and we've had so many deadline days, haven't we, with Tottenham, where in the last two or three days it's they need a striker, and they don't get one. And I think they have actually this window got a good striker who last season scored 15 goals for a fairly poor team in the Premier League, and they know that now they can rely on someone. If Kane gets injured or Kane gets tired, then they have someone actually who can come in and do it and do a decent job. And I think that was a big deal for them. I really think it was.
It seems remarkable that Spurs actually gazumped Chelsea to a transfer as well, and I think more than anything that will have given Daniel Levy a lot of satisfaction on Wednesday night or Thursday morning, whenever it was, when he felt like they were going to get Llorente. There must be some high fives in the Tottenham boardroom.
I wonder, because I mean, you look at that deal with Llorente, you sort of think, why didn't it happen earlier? There's not sort of any it wasn't sort of a massively cut price deal. It wasn't, he suddenly got unhappy. I do wonder if they saw that Chelsea were interested, and they actually thought, oh, maybe let's go for it. You know, that maybe we can do that as well. It would work for us. You know?
I mean, apparently it was Pochettino that persuaded him to sign, you know, over Chelsea. The Spurs put in a bigger bid than Chelsea. I think eventually Chelsea did match that, but by that point he was already at Hotspur Way chatting to Pochettino, and by then it was too late because he worked his magic and convinced him to join.
Yeah, I mean, I heard that they had a really good bid for Janssen, and that they then thought
West Brom.
I think West Brom and actually a couple of others as well, where people were really sort of at least making strong signs they're prepared to pay really good money for Janssen. And as a result, I think, well, my theory was that then that persuaded Tottenham to think, actually, maybe this is the kind of money we can't turn down for Janssen. I think they wanted to keep him, you know, but then actually their plans sort of changed when they had a couple of good bids. And then they thought, okay, if we take the money for Janssen, let's find a stopgap, someone who can come in and fill his place. And that's where Llorente came in. But then they got Llorente, and then for whatever reason, the clubs who had shown an interest in Janssen didn't come through. So, you know, still have him there. But I think a good deal. Llorente, I think, a really, really strong signing. I take the point that I think they are missing an attacking midfielder. And that Gomez deal would have been a good one, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it would. And while we're on Llorente, let's do a little bit more on him, because proven winner. He's won the World Cup, he won three Serie A titles in a row under Conte interestingly enough, and a proven goal scorer as well. But he doesn't seem very Pochettino. He's the oldest outfield player Pochettino signed. I think Pochettino signed three players over 25 before, in Fazio, Alderweireld, and Sissoko. Obviously, Fazio didn't last long. Sissoko is kind of hanging by a thread, really, in terms of his Tottenham career. And Llorente is on record, I think, saying he doesn't really like running very much. He just enjoys kind of hovering at the back post and popping up with a big header. How's it going to work, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, as well, not just Pochettino, but Levy as well. You know, I wonder when did Levy last pay, you know, this kind of money for this sort of aged player, you know, someone who's over 30, very little resale value. So it's interesting on two counts. One, I guess it's another big show of faith from Levy and Pochettino in the fact that he's prepared to back him again, this kind of deal. And I think it's interesting as well because it sort of suggests that Pochettino is maybe prepared to just to slightly waver away from his very rigid philosophy of signing young players that are mouldable to his way of playing. And maybe he is now kind of coming around to the thinking that Tottenham have to be slightly more pragmatic. You know, maybe they have to actually have a second way of playing sometimes. They don't always have to play the same way. To have someone a bit older with a bit more experience. You know, these kind of slightly unfashionable things that maybe Tottenham haven't had in the last couple of years. I think Llorente maybe represents that kind of signing for Pochettino as well.
Well, that's interesting because the first few games at Wembley, first couple of games, it has felt like Spurs have needed a plan B. You know, against Burnley, they were struggling to get the second goal. It just wasn't really happening for Kane. And you could have seen the benefit in that game of just sticking Llorente up there. And Ben Davis said it afterwards. He spoke to us in the mix zone. He said, you know, sometimes we need to be a bit more street smart and we need to kind of go long and maybe keep the ball running to the corner, that kind of thing. And having someone like Llorente, who's, as you said, a bit more of an unfashionable player and will do the dirty things, we'll hold the ball up and we'll get on the end of headers, that could really help Tottenham in these tight games that they may struggle to win at Wembley, whereas they were winning comfortably at White Hart Lane.
Yeah, I do agree. I think one of the few weaknesses I think that Pochettino does have is that he does play the same way, home or away, against most teams. And you could say that's a, you know, it's admirable because he obviously has a very strong belief in the way of playing. And sometimes Tottenham, you know, their thing is, look, we know how we play. We think we can beat anyone playing the way we play. But I think sometimes, particularly in the Champions League, against the top teams in the Premier League, particularly away from home, I think you have to be slightly more, as you say, street smart. You know, you have to be prepared to win
ugly. As Ben Davis said, I can't take the credit for the gentle Ben, his wise words.
Yeah. You look at all the top coaches, you know, Mourinho and they know how to win in different ways, and I think sometimes Tottenham have to just accept they might have to play a different way, might be a bit tight, as you say, win a bit ugly, go a bit longer, get crosses in the box, have a bit of a plan B, and I think Llorente will help them do that.
And just, you mentioned Jensen, it's not looking very good for him. There were some reports last night that Brighton might be trying to do a loan deal for him. As you said, I heard West Brom put in quite a big bid. It already felt like to me that he was a third striker behind Son anyway. I always felt that if Kane was out for an extended period, then Son would be called on most of the time, and that kind of proved the case last season. It now seems like he might even be the fourth choice, and I kind of feel for him in a way. You know, do you think he's been given a fair crack of the whip by Pochettino? I mean, or is it just a case of not taking his chances when they've come?
I think he's had a decent chance. I don't think it's one of those where if he left now, you could say, oh, he never got a good run of games. He had that run of games where Kane was injured, you know, where he had about 6-7 starts in a row, do you remember last season?
Yeah.
And I think he scored maybe one goal, something, you know, a penalty or two or something. And he has had his chance. And the problem is, when you go to a top team like Spurs, who are playing the Champions League, you don't have the luxury of saying, you know what, I want 20 games, you know, where I can just mould myself, you know, work my way in. You have to hit the ground running. You can't afford to play averagely for a long time and expect to keep your place. And sure, I mean, you could say, I guess he could have had more time, he could have had more starts here and there, but I do think he has had a decent opportunity, and even when he's come on, when he's played, he hasn't really looked like a player who's just sort of struggling for sharpness. He's looked like a player who's sort of struggling for confidence. He's looking
he's been very safe, hasn't he?
Yeah, a bit too safe. Yeah, so I don't think he can complain.
It's very difficult to see him getting games, really, because I think Llorente will be the man for the domestic cups at the very least, and he'll be the man to come off the bench. So you do wonder. The other deal Spurs got over the line yesterday was Serge Aurier. We kind of knew that deal was going to happen because he got the work permit through from the Home Office on Wednesday. So, I mean, there was the usual kind of fears about Chelsea gazumping Spurs, which made the Llorente irony all the sweeter. But that looked like a deal that we knew was going to happen. Obviously, there's controversial kind of off-field issues, and it looks like the club is going to meet them head-on, judging by his statement, judging by the statement from Proud Lily White, the LGBT supporters group as well. But just in footballing terms, I think that's a really, really good signing. I mean, half the price of Kyle Walker, 4 years younger than Kyle Walker, and he looks like he's got all the qualities to play right-back and right-wing-back. You know, he's quick, he's athletic, he got a lot of assists in League One, so I think Spurs fans can be pretty pleased with that, purely in footballing terms.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think, you know, you look at, I think, you know, incredible number of assists, I think, for PSG last season.
I think more assists in League One since 2012 than any other player.
Yeah,
certainly any other defender, which is pretty good going.
Yeah, it's remarkable from right back. And I mean, it does show that, I mean, we know that Tottenham are a very strong way of playing. They use their fullbacks a lot. They like them to get forward and really contribute in the final third. And I think he'll be perfectly suited to that. He's obviously strong. He's quick. He likes to power forward, a bit like Rose almost. You know, he likes to run with the ball and run at the opposite fullback. You know, I think all the indications from what he said in his statement, which was obviously fairly carefully worded, you know, about fresh starts and
it was quite a kind of loaded statement in a way, without saying that much.
Yeah, it looked like it should have been worked on.
No, that was probably the delay in the announcement.
Yeah, that's right. But I think I definitely think at 23 million, you look at Aurier and you think,
today's market seems like a steal.
It could prove to be a great signing. You know, it could go the other way where, you know, he in 6 months' time he might have, you know, done another couple of really stupid things off the pitch, and we'll be saying, you know, why on earth did Tottenham take the risk on this guy?
Yeah,
but I think you hope under Pochettino, he's been given a great opportunity at Spurs to prove himself in England. I think it could prove to be a really good signing, and you know, if he, as you said, half the price of Walker, if he can be anywhere near as good as Walker, then, you know, great signing.
And in a very different way to Llorente, not a very Pochettino signing as well, because he's all about the squad harmony, the commitment, the attitude, the behaviour, the togetherness, and it does, you know, this is a bit of a sensitive point, I think, but it always seems to me like the players that make it under Pochettino are like the nice guys, like the Harry Winks, Harry Kane, Kyle Walker-Peters. You know, we have the privilege of occasionally speaking to them, and you can kind of tell they're all like really nice, blokes. Yeah. And Aurier, you know, I've never spoken to him, I don't know much about him, but obviously he's got this reputation as a bad boy. So, you know, it just didn't feel very Pochettino to me, which, you know, as you said, supports your point about, you know, maybe he's willing to compromise on his principles a little bit, and he's realised that this summer.
Yeah, I mean, do you think it spells the end? You know, not the end, but do you think what kind of news this is for Walker Peters as well? Because obviously,
trying to find out yesterday if Walker Peters was going to go on loan, and the noises from his people in Tottenham were just absolutely not. Like, there's nothing in the pipeline. You know, he's staying in the squad
because he's waited for a long time, hasn't he? And, you know,
yeah,
when they signed Trippier, it was a bit like, oh, what does that mean for Walker Peters? And now he thought this could be his chance.
Yeah, but I don't want to be a kind of downer on it, but I didn't really get on board the Walker Peters train after the Newcastle game, because I think if you actually look at the options Poch had in that game, Winks hasn't been fit all year. He's still struggling with pain in his ankle. Wanyama's not been fit all year. Trippier wasn't fit for that game, so he couldn't play Dier in right back because they'd have no midfielders. He had to really play Walker Peters. I don't think he had much of a choice. It was either that or kind of Sissoko at wing back. Those were his options, and Sissoko ended up playing in the field because Son wasn't fit. So I didn't read too much into that start for Walker Peters. I still think he's a long way off being ready for the first team, being ready for what Pochettino wants him to do.
Yeah.
Although it was a good debut, and I would think he's now firmly kind of third choice right back, but you know, the situation with Danny Rose is still pretty unclear. He can cover left back, so it makes sense to kind of keep him around. And Trippier's been struggling with an injury, and as you said, there's a lot of emphasis in the fullback, so I think it makes sense to keep him in the squad, and just in case.
Because it's not a position, is it, where Pochettino is happy to have one guy who's the sort of established first teamer, and then, you know, a youngster who is kind of a little bit ready but not quite ready. Like, we know that Pochettino wants to have two players who are both completely 100% ready to play whenever he wants them to.
Yeah, and that's almost difficult to difficult to appreciate now, but then I think as soon as the Champions League starts and the domestic cups start, we're going to realise, you know, we're going to kind of remember the way Pochettino does things, which is very rarely plays his fullbacks three times in a week. It happened with Rose a couple of times last year. It never happened with Walker. You know, we don't know, you know, how fit Aurier is, how capable he is of going to be able, you know, be able to do that. So,
do we assume that Real Madrid at home that it's going to be Aurier, or do we think it's going to be Trippier?
I mean, at this moment in time, I'd say Aurier.
Yeah.
Or it's Ronaldo against Trippier. Literally, Ronaldo against Trippier, or Bale. Yeah. And I think it'd be done for pace.
Yeah.
I think Aurier's got that pace. He's got that athleticism that Trippier doesn't have. And I think if you look at the players that Pochettino's used occasionally as auxiliary fullbacks and auxiliary wingbacks rather, and we are straying off topic a little bit here, but he's used Son there, he's used Sissoko there, and it suggests to me that he wants someone who's got pace there. He doesn't really want someone like Trippier who's technical, he can get the ball in the box, he's a good crosser, but he's not particularly quick or athletic. I think Pochettino really wants someone who can get up and down and get up and down quickly, and that's Aurier. So I think when he plays three centre-backs, Aurier's going to be the man on the right side, and I still think Trippier will have a part to play, but I expect he's more likely to be in the cups, in the smaller league games, as he was last year.
And the fact Spurs paid $23 million for him, and the fact that they've sort of taken a bit of a risk on his character and his personality, I think as well suggests that they really believe in him. They think he's a guy who's going to go straight in and make an impact straight away, don't you think?
Yeah. Looking at the window as a whole, obviously the other signings aside from Llorente and Aurier were Bonfoyth, he's an Argentina under 20 centre back who came from Estudiantes for about £10 million. Sanchez, record signing centre back again from Ajax, and Paolo Gazzaniga, the goalkeeper from Southampton. Slightly strange emphasis on the defence. I mean, Spurs had the best defence in the Premier League last year, and they should have had the best defence in the Premier League the year before, were it not for that ridiculous result at Newcastle on the final day. So why do you think Pochettino's kind of revamped the whole defence? I mean, there was a case, wasn't there, to maybe revamp the attacking midfield, not the back four?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's revamped the backup, basically, hasn't he? I mean, I guess, you know, that key five or key four is going to be fairly the same. If we assume Rose comes back and sort of gets over his issues, then he's going to be back in at left back, and then it's going to be Aurier or Trippier at right back, and then it's still going to be probably that three. We think probably Sanchez is going to be a work in progress, right, early on. So in a way, I guess it was slightly forced because Walker wanted to leave, so then they felt they had to replace him. Maybe Wimmer, I think we all think, you know, was sort of the writing was on the wall for a while. Lopez as well, didn't even see him really play, so for whatever reason, you know, he didn't work out. So I think it was slightly slightly forced, those changes. But if you look at it, if you look at the sort of list of those four, is it four? Gazzaniga, those, you know, if you look at the ins and the outs.
And the three defenders.
Right,
yeah.
You look at the ins and outs of those defenders have come in and gone out. I think Spurs are arguably stronger than they were before. And I think their net spend over those sort of those players is fairly low. So I think they've done really good business, to be honest.
Any part of you that thinks they might be kind of laying the groundwork for the future? Because obviously Forth is 19, Sanchez is 21. I mean, Pochettino's categorically said that it's not related to Alderweireld's contract situation, but it does feel like they're kind of, you know, when you were like 13 and you used to draw like, you know, Man U in 10 years, or Tottenham in 5 years, or something, and you'll put all the wonder kids, and you'll make a kind of ridiculous team of the future. It does feel like you've got a team of the future there. You know, fourth centre back with Sanchez. Is there a part of you that thinks that they're worried about that, and that they're laying the groundwork for the next generation of the best defence in the Premier League?
Yeah, possibly. I think to some extent, Tottenham are always laying the groundwork for future players to possibly leave. You know, I think they are that's not a negative thing; it's a positive thing. You look at how Arsenal, you know, teams like that don't lay the groundwork for when they're strong and when their star players leave. So I think it is definitely possible. It's not just Alderweireld. Possibly his future is a bit up in the air. Vertonghen now is, you know, he's not the youngest. You know, he might not have, you know, his years not
30 years young.
Only a year or two maybe left at the top. And we know that Eric Dier obviously is, you know, fairly keen on a move to possibly to Manchester United at some stage. So it's not inconceivable that if Sanchez was to do very well this season and kind of prove himself ready, then you could see them maybe cashing in on Dier next summer, or maybe saying to Alderweireld, you know what, we're going to let you go, or maybe Vertonghen, if he doesn't have such a good season this year, maybe he'll be the one to leave. So I do agree, and I think if they bring someone in, you know, for 40-odd million like Sanchez, who's young, it's clear that the statement is, you know, we believe this guy is going to be a first teamer fairly soon, you know, I think they're preparing for something.
He's got to be, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I think short term...
I mean, Foyth, by the way, he looks about 12 years old. He doesn't look ready for the first team.
I read a profile of him from Dan Edwards, who writes for Goal.com. He's very good. He's based in Argentina, and he obviously watched a lot of Argentinian football. I recommend reading it. And he said that his kind of best attribute is basically dribbling. Right? He's really good at bringing the ball out of defence, which put me in mind of Vertonghen.
Yeah.
Also kind of put me in mind of Chiriches, which is like less encouraging. But I think he could actually be a really exciting player. Obviously, he's been overshadowed a bit by Sanchez's arrival. PSG were after him, and you know, it's fair to say that PSG don't sign bad players anymore, and this summer's proven that. Obviously, so I think it's definitely exciting.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how he does for it. And I do think Pochettino's record at Spurs, particularly, and also at Southampton, of improving defenders has been his best. If you look at all the players he's improved, and there are a lot of players he's made better.
Yeah.
Defenders, particularly, you know, and particularly at Tottenham, you know, you look at Rose, you look at Walker, even Vertonghen, you know, I think. They have all said, you know, that Pochettino has made them better defenders. You know, that he's coached them how to be better positionally, better awareness, technically, everything. So if you have a young defender like Foyth and Sanchez, then probably we're better to be than under Pochettino.
Yeah, and I do think, as well, it could spell kind of full-time move to midfield for Dier. I mean, he's always said, whenever he's asked about it, he was happy to play, you know, where the gaffer puts me, blah, blah, blah. And he's very non-committal on his favourite position, but I think it's fair to say he probably wants to play in midfield, particularly given the dearth of quality there for England and the fact that he could make that position his own at the World Cup in Russia next summer. So I imagine Sanchez might move into that back three, and then Dier then challenges Wanyama for that holding midfield spot, and that'll be quite an interesting battle.
Yeah, it's very possible, and obviously if Winks has a good season this year, then there'll be more competition in the midfield again. The issue for Dier, I think, is that he is always the guy who, when there's an injury or two, he's the one who fills the gap. And, you know, it's very easy to sit here now, you know, at the end of August, start of September, and say, right, this is Tottenham's best team. But as we saw last year, so often it's injuries that dictate. And, you know, if two or three players get injured at the back or in midfield, then Dier, unfortunately, is so versatile that he is the one who will drop in or play even right back or centre midfield or centre half. And
well, hold on. He hasn't played right back now for best part of a year.
No, that's true.
Didn't play there once last season.
That's true, but right.
I did wonder if he was going to play there at Newcastle, as I said, but
it didn't go.
I think that Dier's strength is that he allows Pochettino to change formation mid-match, which is what he wants. So if he's starting in centre midfield, it can become a back three, as we've seen, but it can become a permanent back three or a temporary back three. And if he's starting in a back three, he can move into midfield or move to right back to the mid-game, and then the whole formation has changed. I think Pochettino likes that. So I think he remains important, but what I've said a couple of times, I think I said it last week, was that if you looked at the best 11 last year, including Rose, including Walker, the only player in the three at the back formation that couldn't count themselves among the kind of top two or three in their position in the league was Dier. He was the only one that wasn't one of the top two, three players in my position in the whole Premier League. And so in that regard, it's not really surprising that Sanchez has come in, I think. Because he could be that guy. Pochettino said he could be one of the best centre-backs in the world. So I think the idea would be to ease him into the back three and then let Dier make that midfield berth his own.
Yeah, and I think Dier as well has a lot of value to Tottenham, not just on the pitch. And I think, you know, we've seen before that how, you know, he's a leader in the dressing room, but also, as you said, he's the guy on the pitch that Pochettino trusts. You know, so often when we're sitting in the press box and we see, you know, perhaps what people who aren't there see, that he calls Dier over, and he sort of gives him a bit of a whisper in his ear, and he says, "I want this person to come play here, do this," and Dyer goes out, and then he's suddenly shouting at all his teammates saying, "You move here, do this, this is what we want to do." He's almost a bit of a mouthpiece, I think, for the team. And I do think that, you know, now it seems like a long time ago that Dyer was sort of being really heavily linked with Manchester United, and you know, we know that there was quite strong interest.
Did you see,
there,
by the way, the Dele Alli Instagram live?
No.
Yesterday. So Dele Alli did an Instagram live from the England camp, and they were having banter with kind of Walker and John Stones and a few of the other guys, and they called Walker a snake. And then Walker came back and said, "Well, it was all right for you, Eric, when you wanted to go to Man U."
Oh.
Which was not... I didn't see it, and you can't replay... You can't, like, play back Instagram Live, so this is all kind of hearsay, but a few people were sort of tweeting that apparently Dele looked like he wanted to turn Instagram Live off. It got really awkward.
Yeah, that sounds bitchy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say he probably did want to go to Man U, but that's kind of irrelevant. He's not there now. He's an important player for Tottenham, so...
Yeah, and I think Tottenham did well, obviously, to hold on to him as well. There was probably a time where, quite a few years ago, where Spurs might have, you know, considered a big offer, you know, which I think United were prepared to make. And they obviously told United no uncertain terms that they weren't interested in selling. And that was a big thing. You know, if we're talking about the transfer window, sort of going back to the beginning, it's easy to overlook the fact that Tottenham haven't let go any of their really key players. And some people might say that Walker is a key player, but for me, if you look at the sort of the crown jewels of the Tottenham team, it's Kane, it's Ali, it's Alderweireld, Lloris, maybe Eriksen. You know, these kind of top four or five players that would be very difficult for Tottenham in their financial position right now to replace. They've held on to all of those, and not through a lack of interest from other clubs. You know, we know that City were interested in Rose, we know that United in Dyer, lots of big clubs around Europe sniffing around Ali. You know, but Tottenham have sent out a bit of a statement this winter by keeping all those guys, and they'll be hoping that continuity is really key this season, because all the other teams around them have made lots of changes, lots of new signings, let lots of players go, and that can look great on September the 1st. You know, look at all the ins and outs and you think, wow, look at all these other teams that have done great, great windows. But so often in 2 or 3 months' time, players haven't settled in, managers aren't using the players how they thought they were going to be used, and it all goes a bit tits up. Whereas Tottenham have a team that they know has done well last season, they know each other very well, and they'll be hoping that continuity can really stand in good stead.
Well, I'll say, you are tremendously positive about about everything. I thought...
I've come back from 3 weeks off.
Maybe
I've
spent too long on Twitter. Maybe I need to go to Indonesia and just lie on a beach and get away from it all. So I did feel like... part of me feels like this transfer window was a bit of a disappointment in the end, but... But I think, you know, maybe you've changed my view a little bit. But look, we're going to do a couple more minutes. Let's very briefly touch on what we mentioned earlier. The deals that didn't happen, maybe the areas of the squad where Spurs are still thin, and certainly thinner than some of the Premier League rivals. We know that there's good options at the back now. We know that Kane's got a decent alternative in Llorente, but I suppose... what would concern me if I was Pochettino would be a long-term injury to Ali or Eriksen. And also just the occasional lack of a game-changer in those positions from the bench. Obviously, if Son doesn't start, he can come on and get a goal. He can come on and add a bit of pace and variety. But if he's on the pitch, who have you got to bring on behind Kane? It's Sissoko, it's Nkudu, and maybe it's Lamela, but I mean, who knows when he's going to be fit and focused enough to play for Tottenham again.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we saw in the big games last season, it was so noticeable when you looked at the team machine, the starting lineup of Tottenham was just as good, if not better, than Chelsea's. It was just as good, if not better, than Manchester United, City's. But when you looked at the substitutes bench, you know, it was really stark how, you know, Chelsea were bringing on Fabregas and Willian and Pedro, and Tottenham are bringing on Onana and Winks, you know, and it's a completely different level. And I do think that they have possibly a stronger bench with Llorente, obviously, but you're right, there is still a bit of a hole when it comes to that sort of attacking midfield. What are they going to do to come on? They haven't got a game changer, a Pedro or someone like that, who they can just bring on and say, look, go and do something different. And I was surprised they didn't try and get another attacking midfielder in with a bit of pace, you know, maybe someone like Salah or someone.
I think they might have, and there was a lot of talk about Demarai Gray from Demari. There's a lot of talk about Gray from Leicester. There was some potentially nonsense talk from Sky about Lucas Moura. So, I mean, I think it's kind of well established that Pochettino has always wanted a quick winger who can, in his words, kind of break the line. That's what Sissoko was meant to be. That's what Nkudu was meant to be. Yeah, I suppose it does surprise me as well that they didn't get that. But there seems to be a lot now on Lamela getting fit. And there seems to be a lot on Sissoko rediscovering that form that he's occasionally shown for Newcastle and consistently shown for France.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they were interested in Barkley. You know, that was the big one, isn't it? That everyone kind of thought they were the logical one to fill that attacking midfielder slot.
We haven't laughed nearly enough about Barkley's deadline day, but I think that seems like it'll be one that keeps on rumbling. Well, maybe Spurs revisit in January.
It's logical that if you look at it from Tottenham's point of view, they've got a player who probably isn't going to play much before the January transfer window. So why would they spend 30, 35 million, which is what Everton wanted from Spurs, now, when they conceivably probably think in January they might pay 10, 15 million less, and they're not actually going to lose any game time because he's not going to be fit before then. So I can understand why Tottenham weren't particularly interested in sort of hitting the exact price tag that Everton wanted. By all accounts, you know, Barkley, you know, if it's right, what we're led to believe is that Pochettino actually wants to turn him into more of a central midfielder anyway, you know, a box-to-box kind of guy. And he's certainly not the sort of pacey guy who's going to run in behind and sort of suddenly unlock defences that way. You know, he's kind of the
Dembele successor.
Right, exactly, yeah. So I don't think necessarily he would have been the answer anyway. And as you say, maybe they'll revisit it in January, but it was a strange one, yeah, him
I think, well,
U-turning
from
the last minute.
From his point of view, I think it makes perfect sense as well, because if he's not going to be fit until the end of the year, then why sign for Chelsea now when you can wait and see, you know, what's happening at Tottenham, what's happening at Chelsea in January, and you might get better offers. I think, you know, clubs from abroad can offer him a contract in January, and other Premier League clubs might be interested. So,
I was surprised he turned down Chelsea. I mean, you think, you know, it's the champions, Conte, one of the best coaches in Europe.
Yeah, but I mean,
they pay a lot of money.
You know, speak to Steve Sidwell or Scott Parker or, you know, any number of kind of very talented, very promising English midfielders to go to Chelsea, and it doesn't happen for them.
Yeah. But Barkley, I mean, would thank himself,
I don't know,
to
what
get in the team.
Yeah, I don't know what his motivation.
And now he's facing out now like to 4 months where, okay, he's injured, but he's at a club where he knows that Koeman's not really particularly interested in him. No. I mean, great from Spurs' point of view, possibly, but I'm surprised that he decided not to go with that move. And also, we've seen before with the likes of Berahino and players that Tottenham have been interested in, it's very much, okay, they didn't get in this window, but surely next window they'll get that over the line. And things change, you know, like, who knows, Tottenham, you know.
In Berahino's case, things probably change for the better, where Spurs are concerned.
But, you know, players come through at Spurs, you know, one of the youngsters might come through, and suddenly Tottenham look at it in January and think, no, we don't actually need Barkley anymore, we're not going to go back in for him. So it's a risk from his part to think that in 4 months' time, Tottenham will definitely come back. It's certainly possible.
You know, that's almost what I'm saying, in a sense. Like, one of the youngsters would have come through regardless, you know, of whether he signed, because he's injured. So he can, if Winks has been absolutely incredible for the next 6 months, and in January he's in the England squad, he's a shoo-in for Russia, then why would Barkley want to come to Tottenham? And that could have happened if Barkley had joined Tottenham yesterday and been injured for the next 4 months. So
that's true.
Yeah, I see the logic in doing it, and obviously it's tremendously funny that it happened to Chelsea after all the kind of medical gazumpings. well, Willian, I'm obviously thinking of. I think we've just about covered it. I mean, as much as I want to do 10 minutes on Paolo Gazzaniga, I think we can probably leave it.
How many matches will Gazzaniga play this year?
I'm actually going to go for one.
One? What, in the League Cup?
I think maybe there'll be a League Cup game if Vorm's struggling. Actually, no. Nil.
Nil.
I mean, Pochettino was quite amusingly dismissive of him at the press conference. He was like, why is Paolo Gazzaniga signed? And he's basically like, well, you know, we've got a big gap between Vorm and the 18-year-olds, and he's kind of going to fill that gap.
Yeah,
so it's basically
a massive vote of confidence for Gazzaniga's career.
Yeah, he's not as good as Vorm, but he's better than the teenagers. So, yeah. Welcome, Paolo. we're going to wrap it up there. Tom, thanks very much for coming on.
No problem.
Really appreciate that. Will you be going to Everton in a week's time?
No, because I'm only a sort of South Tottenham reporter,
okay,
so if they go up, then we'll have our Merseyside man, Carl Markham, doing that one.
Okay, well, look out. Well, in fact, don't look out for Carl Markham, look out for me. I think I'll be going. I'll see you next week, mate. And thanks very much for listening.